It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Last week's election produced a record midterm turnout in Wisconsin and an abnormally high turnout across the rest of the country for a midterm election. We talked about that in the immediate aftermath of Tuesday, but this morning we'll dive a little deeper into the issue and talk about whether or not gerrymandering had any impact on whether people voted or not, among other things. Were you a new voter in this election? What inspired you to go to the polls? Did you stay home on election day? If so, why? And did gerrymandering have any impact on your decision whether to vote or not? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's the phone number to use to join the program. You can also send an email, ideas@wpr.org, and you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Paru Shah is an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Paru, welcome back to the morning show. Thanks for talking with us again.
Thanks for having me again.
And as I said, you joined us last week on the morning show to dig into voter turnout. Let's quickly recap what it looked like in the 2018 midterms.
Well, as you mentioned, there was record turnout both here in Wisconsin and across the nation. I think highest ever, particularly in Wisconsin. And one of the things that we talked about last week, which I think we're still kind of digging into this week, is what motivated people to go to the polls. And it sounds like it was a combination of national politics and national climate, as well as some really closely contested races in places like Wisconsin.
So national issues influenced people to vote. What were the Wisconsin issues, do you think, that drove turnout? And how do we know this?
I think for the exit poll data, it talks a lot about healthcare, which I think both in Wisconsin and nationally was something that people were particularly concerned about. And then the economy is always an important issue for every election. And we saw that again here in Wisconsin, kind of looking at how people feel about what's been happening over the last 2, 4, 6 years.
Not to do too much scoreboard watching here, but how did Wisconsin's turnout numbers reflect the rest of the nation? Were we higher, lower? Where were we?
Wisconsin actually is traditionally higher, and we maintain that again this year. So we were, I think, closer to 60%, and I think nationally we're looking at closer to 30-40%. So.
We're talking about voter turnout in the recent midterms here in Wisconsin. Paru Shah is associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Want to know what drove you to the polls? And don't say your 98 Volkswagen Golf, please. That would not be good. What was it that caused you to go out and vote? Was it an issue? Was it a candidate? Share your story with us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Democratic U.S. Senate incumbent Tammy Baldwin overcame a challenge from Republican Leah Vukmir, winning a number of counties that had delivered votes for Donald Trump in 2016. Can you break that down for us?
Yeah, I would say that a couple of things. Tammy Baldwin is a strong incumbent, and while I wouldn't say that incumbents across the board did well this year, actually I think they didn't do as well as predicted maybe, Tammy is a very strong incumbent and runs a very strong campaign and has in the past. She walked in with a much larger coffer than Leah Vukmir, who quite honestly had a really tough primary to get through first. And then I think by the time she got through that primary, had a lot less money and a lot less ability to compete with Tammy at that scale. And I would say that probably Leah lost some of the national backing that other Republican candidates were getting or other candidates were getting across the country when the writing was on the wall pretty early on, where it seemed as Tammy had maintained a very strong lead over Leah, and it didn't seem like there was going to be a lot of opportunities for that to close.
Yeah, all the polls pretty much showed throughout the campaign that Tammy Baldwin had about a 10-point lead, and that's exactly what happened. She did win by that that 10-point margin. But is there why did she outperform, for example, Tony Evers? That race, the race for governor, was a lot closer than the race for the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of people who in the past probably were Walker Baldwin voters. I think, again, because she's a strong incumbent, I think she has connected with a lot of voters throughout the state, particularly on health care. As I mentioned, health care, I think, was a really strong issue that motivated people this year. And so I think she kind of started off with a much stronger campaign and as an incumbent came in with a stronger candidacy versus Tony Evers, who is coming in. Yes, he has elected office, but he hadn't run for governor. And I think Scott Walker is also a very formidable incumbent. And so I think it makes sense that he would have had a tighter race.
The Washington Post said that the Republicans' redistricting advantage after the 2010 election was so huge that people wondered whether it was even possible the Democrats could win back the House. Were you of this mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the redistricting that's been happening over the last, since the 2010 election, right? So I think one of the things to remember is that redistricting happens by states in different ways, and that the majority of state legislatures across the country are Republican strongholds. And so one of the things that they do is partisan gerrymandering means that a lot of those districts are going to have very safe seats for the Republicans that are already in place. And so it did seem like a very, very difficult hill to climb. I think what we saw here was that there was efforts where Democrats and other organizations realized that there was a small enough or a manageable enough margin that there was a possibility of making some difference. And so you saw that happen in the House, but I think one of the things that we didn't see, right, is happen in the Senate. And I think that's, again, one of the consequences of this partisan gerrymandering.
Well, and in the Senate races, the Democrats kind of were at a disadvantage anyway because the seats they had to defend were, a lot of them were in states that Donald Trump won by significant margins in 2016. So that wasn't entirely unexpected. In the next election, though, the shoe is going to be on the other foot, so to speak. People are talking about how the Republicans are going to have more seats to defend in states that might be less advantageous for them. So, you know, this kind of thing tends to work its way out from one election to another. Were there states where gerrymandering gave Democrats a leg up?
No, not really. I think at this point, I mean, because the Republicans have had state control at the state level for such a long time since the 2010 elections, and again, because of the way those redistricting is organized by the states and by the party in that has the seats. Mm-hmm. I think it's really difficult for Democrats to have had an advantage. The hope is that with kind of seven new Democratic governors and some movement, a little bit at least, in some of those state legislatures, we'll see something. Not in the 2020 election, but maybe in the 2022 election, around changes in those maps.
All right, let's take a phone call here. Jeff is with us in Fond du Lac. Jeff, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Good morning. I just wanted a quick, very easy answer to your question on what it is that drove me to the polls, and that is just a civic responsibility that I've always felt since I first turned 18. Which was back in the, I guess, 1980, for Ronald Reagan was the first election that I was able to vote for. And I haven't missed a major election. There might have been some spring elections that I did always make that were minor, more minor. But I've never felt like it was one of those things that I never felt my vote doesn't count or it doesn't make a difference or they're all crooks or whatever people use for excuses. It's just always something, you know, I pay my taxes every year. I send in my withholding for my employees, and I vote. And I think it's just one of those things that I've always felt I was responsible for.
Jeff, first of all, a tip of the morning show hat to you for your civic responsibility. Paru, is how typical a voter would Jeff be?
Jeff is what we call a consistent voter, right? Somebody who has is strongly attached to his civic responsibility, and there are a large portion of the voters that we see, particularly in midterm elections, that are always coming out. They're the ones that we can count on for midterms and for general elections. I think one of the things that happens is a couple of things. One is fatigue, election fatigue. There's a lot of elections in Wisconsin. You are probably everybody lives in a village or a town or a city where there's elections every year, and for a local municipal and county, and then the state, and then the national elections. And so I think there is a sense that some people are like, okay, I can't do it all the time. I'm going to go to the ones that I think really matter, whatever that means for them. And then also thinking through, like, okay, so what do I know about those elections? What do I really, am I prepared to vote in those elections? But I do think that one of the things that happened this year is that we're really, that there's this attempt to try to get people more attached to this idea of consistent voting, of being out there all the time, of seeing this as a civic duty. And I think organizations, as I mentioned last week, are really pushing that agenda. And I think we saw it actually work in this last midterm election.
How big a factor was Donald Trump in turnout, do you think?
I think the president is always a factor, just because the midterms is the first chance for voters to vote and give some evaluation of what the president has been doing. I think he motivated people on both sides. The Democrats, I think, were motivated to come out and vote against his policies, and the Republicans were really motivated to go and support him. And so I think we saw both sides. I think we can say that he, as an unusual presidency, and so I think maybe his influence was maybe a little bit greater than we've seen in the past.
Our conversation with Paru Shah continues in a moment. When we come back, we'll talk about the impact that gerrymandering can have on voter turnout, and we'll take your calls at 800-642-1234. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Last week, more than 2.7 million Wisconsinites cast ballots. That makes it the largest turnout for a midterm election in state history. Were you a new voter this election? What inspired you to vote? Did you stay home on election day? Why was that? Do you think gerrymandering had any impact on your decision whether or not to vote? Share your story with us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll go back to the phones in just a minute. Paru Shah is with us, and she is the associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Let's talk about, just for a moment, how gerrymandering can impact turnout in an election. I mean, is there evidence that people either think, hey, my candidate doesn't have a chance, so I'll stay home, or the reverse, my candidate is safe, I don't need to vote? Do we know this?
Yeah, actually we do. So one of the things that is a strong predictor of voter turnout is level of competition in a race. And so you know, we see this actually happen a lot with how exit polls influence then whether or not people are voting, and this idea that, oh, there's something to be gained if I show up to vote. And so one of the downsides to gerrymandering is that there are these very safe districts. And we've seen this here in Wisconsin and many places where, you know, there hasn't been a change in the partisan official for a really long time. And often then the opposing party doesn't even bother putting up somebody in opposition, right? The elections cost money, and there's some sort of resources that would be needed to use to do that. And so you end up with either an uncontested election or an election with an opponent that's really not what we might call a weak opponent. And so this definitely affects the voters, because if you, you know, everybody has limited time and resources as well. And so if you feel like, look, it's not going to really matter one way or the other if I show up, this person is the person who's on the ballot is guaranteed a seat, you're not going to see people show up.
Of course, we had safe districts in Wisconsin before 2010. What changed then?
So one of the things that really, I think, influenced what happened after 2010 is, again, the landslide of elections that Republicans had at the state legislative level. And there is this, I think, a new kind of technology involved in terms of creating these districts that is very, very specific to maintaining then partisan gerrymandering. And so for the last 10 years, because that's who's been in charge in terms of who creates those lines, we've seen these very specifically organized districts where it's very, very difficult for the opposite party. So if it's a Democratic district, it's very strongly Democratic. And if it's Republican, it's very strongly Republican. It's very difficult for them to make any move given who the voters are in those districts.
Let's invite Dave from Oconomowoc to join us. Dave, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Thank you for taking my call. And my question is on the marijuana vote. Why were certain counties allowed to vote that were counties with a lot of college students in it that would vote because of the marijuana law? Why were they allowed to vote and not the rest of the state?
Dave, thanks for that. There were a number of referenda on ballots around the state of Wisconsin on various things, including local property taxes. Some communities had a number of different ballot initiatives on marijuana, and some people are saying that drove voting in those districts. Parusha, what do you have? How can you answer Dave's question?
Yeah, so ballot initiatives and referendum can take a couple of forms. And so some of the ones that you're talking about, like, and there was a lot of school referendum as well, school districts, those are binding. And so they were actually going to lead to some sort of legislative or policy change. The marijuana referendum was really, it's a non-binding one. And really it's an opportunity for the legislature to get a pulse of what the community is thinking. So you might think of it as a survey, like, so what would people say if we put this on, if we move towards this? And so only certain legislators and counties were interested in finding that out. And so do I think they did it to drive up voter participation? No. It just happened to be that I think it did do so because there are a lot of people who wanted to voice their opinion on that. I do think there's a national mood towards legalization of marijuana, and I think Wisconsin, I would guess, would want to see like where we fall within that and within that spectrum of changing our laws.
And to Dave's point about why the whole state didn't vote on it, these were not statewide referenda. These were counties and municipalities who had these on their ballots. These were locally generated referenda, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. Dave, thanks for that call. Let's go to Joanne in Eau Claire next. Joanne, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. My question today is with regard to, are there any figures yet for the midterm election in Wisconsin with regard to votes cast versus votes wasted? Because a larger voter turnout favors the Democrats. We had a very large voter turnout, and we took no seats in our state assembly nor in our state senate. And I find that very disturbing. So I'm wondering when those figures might be out as to votes cast versus votes wasted. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
All right. Thank you, Joanne. Votes cast, votes wasted. Can you explain that, please?
Yeah, I actually don't know those numbers yet. But the idea of whether or not the votes were wasted, I think, really gets, again, towards the idea of redistricting and gerrymandering. So the caller, I think, specifically talks about the fact that we can have in Wisconsin the popular vote go heavily towards the Democratic Party and still not gain any seats because of the way the seats are drawn. And again, this is, I think, the main argument that we're seeing in this fair elections case that we hope, you know, gets seen by the Supreme Court, that this is by definition unfair, right? That it's not actually capturing what the voters really want. So.
All right. Joanne, thanks for the call. Let's go to Julie next in Milwaukee. Julie, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I was just calling in response to your question as to what drove people to the polls. And as I mentioned to your screener, I come from a family that we traditionally do vote in pretty much every election, local, statewide, et cetera. We've got family and friends on both sides of the aisle, but overwhelmingly, we all made sure we turned out and voted, first and foremost, because of the current administration in Washington and the absolute lack of governing on the Republican side to put any type of checks or balances on this current administration, which is very disturbing at a personal and professional level. So I just wanted to give my feedback regarding that. We vote regardless, but this definitely was a motivating factor in this particular election.
Julie, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us this morning. Parisha, what did the midterms convey about the level of enthusiasm in the Republican Party versus the Democratic Party?
I mean, I think there is enthusiasm in both parties still. I think that it's the Democrats now need to think about the next 2 years and how they're going to be able to demonstrate that they can make a difference and actually pass some legislation. I think it's difficult for voters to continue to vote against the party and not feel like they're voting with their own party. I think the Republicans are in the same place, actually. The caller just mentioned this lack of checks and balances, disappointment among some Republicans about what this administration has been doing. And so the next 2 years are really their opportunity to show that, okay, we can meet some of those more centrist or less marginalized voters and say, like, okay, we can actually pass something. Because I think people are not going to be impressed with two parties that refuse to work with each other for the next 2 years. That will not be something that helps with voter turnout, I don't think, in 2020.
Yeah, and if you look at the output of Congress, they make the Truman administration's do-nothing Congress look like overachievers. Not much happening in Washington, people getting frustrated. Paru Shah, thank you for joining us again on The Morning Show.
Thanks for having me again.
Paru Shah, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.